Hello and welcome to the Renegades Review of Culture, a podcast about anything in pop culture, from art to literature and music. My name is Yama, and this time my friend Robin and I will be discussing the life and music of perhaps one of the most underrated musical geniuses of the last century. Living the easy life certainly isn't something that would apply to her. This episode is about the truly wonderful Miss Nina Simone.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me.
We've got a selection of songs of Nina Simone we'd like to talk about, and we'll tie that into her life as well. Now, the first one is the one you chose, Robin. Which one is that?
Please don't let me be misunderstood. It's probably actually, I think, one of the greats when you think about it.
But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Like with a lot of artists, I think Nina really used music to escape a lot of pain. A lot of sort of anguish in her life. And I think if you listen to them, you really do hear it. It is the cries of, yeah, you're not, no one's perfect. I do things wrong. I do things that's fucked up, but I'm not a bad person. I'm trying my best. Mm-hmm. And of course, once you sort of learn more about her history, you know, as someone she was suffering from bipolar disorder, I think you really do hear it. You got the cries of, it's not my fault. I can't help being this way. I think Please Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood is really an anthem for regret. Regret over how one's actions and how one can be perceived because of those actions. You know, I've done something wrong, but I'm not necessarily a bad person. I think it's something we all feel like, you know. We try, it goes back to that old phrase, not the road to hell is paved with good intentions. You know, we all have good intentions, but we don't necessarily do good things because of it. And when you learn more about her history, that she is someone who had bipolar disorder. You know, she suffered with it quite badly. And later on in life, she actually became quite abusive towards her little girl. So I think you hear it there. Please don't make me understood. I do love you. I do love my daughter. I do love my friends. I do love my family. I just can't help being this way sometimes. You know, it doesn't justify, and that's, I think, what's really good about it. It doesn't seek to justify those actions or those mistakes. But simply say, I just can't help being this way, almost. And I wanted that's a bit of a cop-out, if I'm honest.
In what sense?
If you're doing something that is directly harming someone else, you know, good intentions or no intentions, you got to stop. Or you got to find a way of stopping or finding a way of coping. And maybe that means maybe not being a mother, in her case, or... Maybe just, I don't know, I'm very conscious of talking about this because I have no experience with bipolar whatsoever. So I don't know what, because it must have been hell going through this.
Depression is a very large part throughout her life and musical career, isn't it? I remember her saying that with the more success she gained, that she said that the depression started coming up.
Yeah.
And she felt like she was being handled as a racehorse. And...
Yes,
she actually said that. Yeah, I saw that in the Netflix documentary, What Happened to Miss Simone, that she said that. And I wonder if her trying to find out what her identity is, you know, being a black woman in America at the time, also sort of has had an influence on the way she thought.
True. But I've very interesting, you know, you said not being treated like a racehorse.
I mean, also, it's also her daughter said that she actually, this is a quote from the documentary again, that her daughter Lisa said that, she said, my mother was Nina Simone 24/7, and that's where it became a problem.
Yeah.
So, and she was fighting her own demons after her shows, and she just couldn't live with herself. I wonder if that was also partially due to the fact that she was a brilliant musician, but it wasn't really that she wanted to become a jazz or soul singer. She wanted to be...
She wanted to play Bach.
Yeah.
She wanted to play classical music.
She wanted to be the first black pianist, a classic pianist.
Yeah, and she never really lived up to that, sadly.
This is going back when she was very young. There was a church service, right? She was playing piano at, and she was there with her mother at the service. And then there were two white, middle-class American women, one of whom set up a special fund for her in order to allow her to study at New York's Juilliard School of Music. But she was first rejected from Philadelphia's Curtis Institute, right? That rejected her scholarship application. And that was because she was black.
Black. It's still the very bizarre story on Nina Simone is that without growing up in an ostensibly very racist culture, we would have never got Nina Simone. But she also got an honorary degree from them in the 90s, so...
Yeah,
well... It kind of came full circle in a very bizarre way.
Yeah, because she wanted to become a sort of classic pianist. And then when she was... Shortly after she was rejected, she... She went to Atlantic City, right, where you have the casinos in New Jersey, and she became like a cocktail piano player, I think, if I remember correctly. Yeah. And then she was so ashamed of that, or she was ashamed to tell her mother that she changed her name, which she got a stage name, Nina Simone.
I think one of the best things about that story, what I find fascinating, is that she was going to be fired as she started singing.
Yeah, she had to sing. She had to sing, yeah.
She's more or less told, and she's like, yeah, and you got someone who's never, I guess, I don't know, she never really went for any training. She's a trained pianist, but I don't think she's a trained singer, and yet it kind of works. There's kind of a very raw approach to it, because you listen to her, yeah, she's not a trained singer, but it's kind of brilliant because of that. It's very raw, it's very emotional, she puts everything into it. And if you watch her perform, Jesus Christ, I only think it's kind of like acting. She just puts everything into it, expressing a single emotion.
But she's heavily concentrated when you watch her performances behind the piano. You can see that she's had...
Slight enough girls matters.
Yeah, well, you can see that. You can see that she's had a classical... Well, she's a classical pianist at heart, right? She's very concentrated when she takes a seat behind the piano. And the entire audience is just completely silent. And there is also clips on YouTube where you can find her shouting at people like, shh, be quiet.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you don't give her full attention when you're at one of her shows. She will bloody chastise you for it.
There's a few more lonesome cities that I'd like to see, while the wine of wanderlust is still inside of me.
One of the songs I want to talk about is Lonesome Cities, because this is almost like a jazz club song, I would say. It's like when you hear the piano, you hear the brushes of the drums, and I don't know, I find it really a really nice song to listen to. I imagine a lot of things when I listen to music. I sort of take it all in when I listen to songs. I imagine myself in sort of a New York jazz club. Right, with
drinking a cigar, smoking a cigarette.
Yeah, exactly. With whiskey, drinking a whiskey, and chatting around, or I don't know, sitting in like a wing back chair next to a fireplace, I think.
How many jazz clubs do you know has a wing back chair with a fireplace?
I don't know. I just imagine there's like in a corner, right? There's one lonely person, and that's me. There's the one lonely person that just all takes it all in, the music.
Black roll neck.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I just love that song. I think it's really nice. I wouldn't say it's one of the greatest songs, but it's just a nice song to listen to.
My baby don't care for shows. My baby don't care for clothes. My baby just cares for me. My baby don't care for and races. My baby don't care for hot tone places.
My Baby Just Cares For Me is off her first album. And beautiful, beautiful song. Probably her most well-known as well. She kind of had a second wind at a later stage of her career, where it was featured on a Chanel No. 5 ad.
Because wasn't it that she wasn't that popular anymore, and then after that advert used the music, it kind of waned.
Yeah, it kind of built her reputation again, and certainly I think that might have been the first real encounter with a European audience as well.
But so what is it you like about the song?
I think it's interesting because you can listen it to recordings very early on in the career, then listen to recordings very later on, and you can sort of see a massive difference. I mean, to begin with, it was a very sort of jazzy, light song, you're not my baby, Jesus cares, it's really nice. But it's also, and again, this is probably one's interpretation or one's reading of the song, but I heard, you know, covers of the song, well, I should say the originals, perhaps, because this was a cover of a cover, where men sing this song, and takes a very different sort of meaning if you sort of picture straight masculinity. You know, my baby just cares for me. Yes, this woman loves me so much she cares for nothing else. I mean, that is sort of that is the height of vanity almost. But I don't know. I guess it was when Nina sings it though, it does take almost this sort of sinister turn. And as my baby just cares for me, it becomes less about love and more about obsession.
I was going to say that, yeah, because if you take it from look at it from her perspective or the female perspective.
But from the position of someone who is who may be vulnerable in the relationship, it takes a far more sinister turn.
Well, if you look at her career, there was someone who was sort of obsessed with her as well, which is her ex-husband, Andrew Strout. Because I think she was in New York. She was singing at a jazz club, and then
yeah, they met at a club.
He found her very appealing. He was a police. He was a copper in America, like a police detective, and. Mm-hmm. She was attracted by his sort of, I don't know, she was sort of attracted by his masculinity or him being a very strong character, a very confident person.
Is this necessarily stuff to do with masculinity? I mean, a woman can be strong and confident.
Well, that's why I said a strong character.
Strong character.
He's very confident. Yeah, it wasn't necessarily the best choice she made in her life, wasn't it?
What's even worse, she also made him her manager, which is probably not a smart idea either.
Because she was very close to some of her friends, men and women, and he wouldn't be very happy about her flirting around with other people, and he sometimes would beat her up afterwards.
Yeah, so that's sometimes a sign of domestic abuse is... almost you want to sort of cut away that person's connections to other people, so they only rely on you and you alone. But no, it's a beautiful song. But also, if you listen to the recordings of that song later on in her career, she does some stuff with that song that is absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. The piano. I think there's one bit where they saw in a documentary, What Happened, Miss Simone, where they saw describing that she just got into the studio, she started singing it, and then she started playing the riff on another song. And it sort of meshed beautifully, and they were just sitting there going, how the hell is she doing this? It's unbelievable.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear for the whole round world.
There is a song I think we have to talk about, two songs actually, which are from the time she was heavily engaged within the civil rights movement in America in the 1960s. And there's this civil rights movement anthem, I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free. And the thing is, the strange thing about that song, right, it's a song about wanting to be free or liberated, but at... You would think that one would sing that in a very low mood, right? And if you listen to the piano at the beginning, it sounds like a very happy song, which I think is quite contradictory to what it's about.
No, true. Plus also, what does it feel like to be free? That in itself is a question that I don't think could be necessarily answered in a song. No, but you do get a very sort of sense of longing.
Yeah. So she was very engaged within the civil rights movement, even to the extent that her husband and manager at the time, Andrew Strout,
advised her against becoming heavily involved in that movement because he thought it would be bad for her career because she would see other people performing in American TV shows like Aretha Franklin, amongst others. And she would think like, why am I not on television performing, right? Why?
Essentially, she becomes too controversial.
Yeah, exactly. And there's this other song that's, well, very interesting because it only took her 1 hour to write. And I guess that's mainly down to the anger she felt inside. What was the event again?
It was a building in, I think it might have been a school building in Mississippi, burnt down. And unfortunately, there were some black children inside and they burnt to death. No one tried to help them. So as you can imagine, that it's utter, you can imagine the actual fury one would feel. You've got to think it's somewhat similar to what's going on today in America with Black Lives Matters and what's going on in this country with Black Lives Matters as well.
The interesting thing about that song, Mississippi Goddamn, is that there's also that she's swearing in the song as well. And I remember that in the Netflix documentary that someone said that no one would dare to actually swear in write songs, right? And some stations wouldn't even want to play the song because she swore in the song.
I think they also probably didn't want to play it for other reasons as well. No doubt that, again, being quote-unquote controversial. There's also one story I sort of love about that song. Is that when she first sang it, apparently her voice dropped an octave lower and she was never able to sing at the same sort of octave she was before. Such was her fury as singing the song.
Yeah, I've read about that as well.
But no, Nina Simone got very heavily behind the civil rights movement and in a sense she thought it sort of gave her kind of a justification for what she was doing because, as I think we said before, Nina Simone was not a jazz artist at heart. She was a classical pianist. That's what she wanted to do. If she had half a chance, that's all she wanted to do. But unfortunately, the circumstances of a very racist society, that's all what she could do. She just happened to be amazing at it as well. But no, she felt it all gave sort of justification. It made it made sense. You know, I could reach people through my music, and that's what I can do.
Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to? All on that day, will I run to the rock? Please hide me and run to the rock. Please hide me and run to the rock.
Please hide. Cinnamon, I think, is probably one of my favorites, if not the favorite of Nina Simone's songs. And that is almost this sort of grand mash of gospel and this free jazz. Now, obviously, the song is mostly jazz. That's what it is. It's a very interesting mixture of jazz and gospel. It's very much a jazz song if you listen to the chords, but it has this sort of grandeur that you only really get with gospel or opera. You got very much the core of it, a story of man sinning. And basically coming and getting what he's coming to him. You know, man, you cannot hide underneath a rock, you cannot hide beneath the sea, you can't turn to the devil. God's judgment will find you.
Well, what I listen to mostly in this song, because this is probably the most interesting song she has made, because it's 10 minutes long, isn't it?
Yeah.
And like you said, there's so many different influences in the song. You said the jazz bit. I also think there is like Latin American influences in there, because you've got this bit after the beginning, you know, is it power, and then you've got, it's like 3.5 minutes in, and then you've got the yeah. Clappy bit.
The clappy bit, that's the technical term.
Great, yeah, I would be such a great musician, yeah, after the clappy bit. But no, so after the clappy bit, and then you have this frolicky piano.
Piano. Okay.
It's a bad description.
No, I get where you're going with this.
It's like, it's almost like if the notes are dancing, right, on the piano. So it's like, then it goes from one style into another, and then into another one again, and then towards the end you've got the gospel.
I say the gospel's throughout. The gospel's more theming more than anything else.
I think it's more a blend of things. So it goes from A to B, back to A, to C, to B, to A, to C. Anyway, now what you can hear in Cinnamon, there's this, the bit towards the end, when she plays piano, and you can hear that she's very technically gifted, and that's just one of the many aspects that makes that song fantastic.
Spring is here. Why doesn't my heart go dancing?
Robin, if you think of spring, right? Uh-huh. What are the things that pop up in your mind?
Baby lambs, sun, it's not as fucking cold as it was.
Happiness, right?
Nah.
Or happy, you feel happy because, you know, winter's over.
This is the thing, I like winter.
Okay, you're the wrong person to ask this.
No, I am the wrong fucking person to ask this. No, I like winter because I can't stand the warm. Yeah, I do not deal well with summer. Spring is all right, but no, I'm more of a winter person because I can put on a coat, I can put on a jumper, and I can just live with it. But it gets too cold, and I'm like, fuck it, I'm gone. There's even limits to my tolerance, sir. As legendary as it is.
There goes my segue into the next song, Robin. Thank you, Robin.
You're welcome.
You did get the baby lambs, and that's sort of what I was trying to get at. But no, there's this song called Spring Is Here. And when I think of a spring, right, you think of something, oh, right, the sun is shining again, winter's over. I like the winter, I like winters as well, but one's happy that the sun is shining again, finally. But now, this song sounds, you would think when you write a song about a spring, you go like, oh, yay, it's spring again, I'm happy, flowers and the bees and whatever, how that song goes. No, but
that's what it's called.
When you listen to Spring Is Here, you would almost think that it's almost impossible to sound any less excited as Nina Simone is about spring. And it sounds like she's a very depressed person, actually. So I find that a very interesting concept, that when you would think of a song about spring, you usually think about this is a positive and happy song, and she's doing the polar opposite. And it's almost like she's struggling to find anything positive in life or about life. So yeah, that song, for me, is one of her more interesting ones. Right, to wrap up, Robin, what do you think Nina Simone's legacy is?
I think when you talk about sort of jazz artists, she has to be up there with the top. Personally, I think she's probably one of the greatest musical geniuses what deserve. I mean, I think you literally have to sort of make a group which is like Beethoven, Bach, Mozart, and Nina Simone. I think she is certainly among them. There's someone that would always stay with me, which is one line from the documentary, which is her daughter, they're speaking at the end, that in many ways, she lived a troubled life, but when she sort of played music, it kind of went away. And I wonder if that's what the making of a true artist is. It's escaping into something you love and something you can do to get away from, quite frankly, the unbearable shitness of the world. One,
two. That was the Renegades review of the life and music of Nina Simone. His name's been Robin. I've been Yelmer. If you have any suggestions for things we should review, just send us an email, info@soundgorillas.co.uk. Thanks for listening. Bye.